Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, valuation of a corporation's common stock. As a usual exercise today, as every day, we're going to have a look at the numbers here. And as you can see, it's kind of a sour day. It's picked up a little steam here at the end, with the bulls beginning to have some life. Now, it was down earlier today, as you can see, and it had been spiking in the early morning, and then the bears took over and started smacking everyone around. So right now, the Dow is showing a little bit of life, 22.22% up, and the S&P 500 is about the same. The NASDAQ is still down, but as you can see from the spark chart, it's beginning to rally. It might finish the day. Oh, let me see. Yeah, it might actually finish the day in the positive territory, but that remains to be seen. But crude oil, as you can see, it actually was down in early trading, and only in the last hour and a half or two did it finally begin to get into positive territory. Crude oil going up, and we can expect that to keep going on down through the next few months or years, I don't know. But like I said, don't be surprised if you see 125 a barrel by the end of this semester. There's that. Look at the S&P 500 just to show you the volume. Again, you've got that very weak volume. We're near the end of the trading day, and it's 1.3 billion shares against the typical day, 3.9 billion. So we're having, it's about a third, if that, it's going to finish about a third of a typical trading volume day. That gives you that evidence of the wait and see, hold back. There's not a whole lot of money going into equities. And if you look at the metals, they're down, so money's coming out of metals. Now, the 10-year bond is up 14 basis points, which points to, of course, the price is going down if the yield's going up. So investors are getting out of bonds, definitely getting out of metals, and they're really not thrilled about equities right now either. Most likely, you're seeing most of that money going straight into cash. Wait and see. The big dogs are on the sidelines, just essentially waiting to see what's going to happen in especially Eastern Europe and especially with supply chain issues. One part that place that is concerning us right now is food products. The grain situation, wheat especially, is going to be perilous. And that's a big thing because wheat is the basis for so much of what we eat. Bread, for example, anything that's a bread, a pasta. And so the limiting of the supply of grain, of wheat, coming out, for example, of Ukraine. Ukraine used to be a massive producer of wheat. And, of course, Russia is too. And when you have those markets no longer producing the wheat, Russia, because we're shutting down its exports, Ukraine, because they're using all their tractors to tow away destroyed Russian tanks, you're not going to have much of that. You're not going to have as much delivery of wheat to all of Western nations. Now, going over here real quick, FTSE and the Nikkei, they were not really enthusiastic today over the last 24 hours either. So we've got a very quiet situation. And that's, like I said, there's a defensiveness. We're waiting to see if there's going to be anything else come up. There are concerns now because the Ukrainians are backing the Russians up, retaking territory they lost, that Russia is going to get desperate and go for chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. That would expand the war and make it into something of a mini World War III because NATO would invoke Article 5 most likely, or a limited version of it, and then we'd be in a real situation where wars have significant impact on stocks. To some extent, it would be an adverse impact in a war like this. Taking that off to the side, just a real quick look to see what the yield curve is doing. As I said, it's already inverted, so we're going to have a recession. But if you look at it right now, we are getting deeper and deeper into an inversion from the 15th, where we had a 1 basis point inversion on the 7-10 year leg. We now, it went to 3, 2, 3, and then it got to 4, and then to 4, it's held at, 5, and now we're to 5 basis points. So in other words, the inversion is not correcting, it is actually deepening, and that points to more certainty of a recession. 9 to 12 months is where I project it, moderate. Not severe. I don't foresee it being severe, but it will be moderate. And even if we're starting to show the first signs of the recession later this year, that's going to have significant impact on the politics in Washington. The ruling party generally loses seats in an off year in the midterm, and this could make that a more significant thing. To what extent is that going to impact on our world in finance, business, all that kind of stuff? We can talk about that over lunch sometime. But anyway, there's that. One minor point. Yeah?
What are the seed and agriculture companies like Monsanto doing right now?
Let's have a look. You tell me, what do you think they'll do? Really? Let's try that again. Oh, that's right. It's private. It's a private company. But there are other ones I could do. ConAgra. Not spectacular, but it's bucking the trend. Why would that be? Well, if the supply of wheat is limited, then the price of wheat will go where? Yeah. So it's bad news for some. It's good news for others when you have a situation where supply is limited. On the other hand, we are now having a massive culling of chickens because of that bird flu, that avian flu. So how is that going to impact a company like Tyson? Well, gee. So there you go. Limiting supply is not necessarily damaging to companies that use that supply. In some situations, those companies can benefit because the prices are higher, and therefore they can pass along those price increases along with a little extra scratch to the end users of it. So there you go. And there are other agriculture companies I was looking at. I was trying to think of what was the other one that I had been looking at. ConAgra was one. Oh, Campbell, yeah, Campbell. Kellogg was the other one I was thinking of. Kellogg, there you go. Look at this. Gee, problems for the rest of the world are opportunities for companies sometimes. So when you are thinking about investing, and you say, well, wheat prices are going to go up, the supply is limited, don't think, well, that's going to hurt the companies involved in those kinds of raw production, those raw materials or the whatever. It does not necessarily. In some cases, it can benefit them. So there you are. There was another one, too, I was thinking of. Oh, General Mills. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in other words, bad news for us. Good news. So in other words, the bottom line, though, is that we are astute. We're the educated people. We can stay one step ahead of what is an adverse situation for others is an opportunity for us. Remember that chaos is to the benefit of those who create it and those who know how to take advantage of it. Chaos is always a good thing. Unless you want to be the victim of it. I wanted to show you something. Over on Twitter. This is a side note about warnings about what happens when you go to social media with the idea that you are going to get really good quality information and opportunities there. And that applies also to sites that are disreputable like Wikipedia, Investopedia, Yahoo Finance. But on Twitter, there are companies that advertise their financial services. And you need to be as careful as possible. One of those came up into my news feed, of all places, yesterday. And the name of it was suspicious right off the bat, SECFI, SECFI. Now, any company back in the old days that would have had SEC in its name would have been shut down right away by the real SEC. But these days, there is a lax regulatory environment, and this company posts these ads, and one of them came into my news stream. Apparently, they saw Professor Finance, so, he must want to see this. And it was as bad as you can imagine. And on LinkedIn, I added to what I put here. Now, my comment before I posted it, Twitter gave me a caution that what I was saying might violate their terms and conditions because I used some pretty colorful language for these dumbasses. Now, let's go through, and just so you can see what this company says. Equity is confusing, but it doesn't have to be. We can help. And then it goes into this. Me and my family, this is my first time with stock options. I'm excited, period, but nervous, period. I want to get this right for me and my family. So the first thing is, if you're doing professional ad copy, try to write above the level of the grammar of an eighth grader. But now let's get down to it. Options are derivatives. They are the risky stuff. You don't use the word options and family in the same ad. That's completely irresponsible. You've heard me bitch about this kind of stuff. This is for gamers, for players in the market. They are risky, and you're talking about you're doing these for your family? Yeah, and that was the other part of it. And also, there was another thing, too. Look at this at the top. Equity is confusing, but it doesn't have to be. We can help, notwithstanding their sentence fragments and all that crap. They say equity, and then they talk about options. Equity is stock. It's ownership. Options are a derivative product. They are a carved-off risk taken on stock or something like that. They are not equity. And this one is about as close as you can get to a material misstatement and false information as possible. And so I went on and I said, this is after I cleaned up my language. I am definitely doing a screen capture of this to show my finance students who endure my ceaseless rants about appropriateness of investments. Specifically with respect to what you're advertising, I will tell them how irresponsible your craven marketing is. Now, in my original one, I put a comment, and I went Samuel L. Jackson on them. So, what's the upshot of this? Don't ever cross my path if you're doing this kind of gaming and scamming and all that. And I put this on LinkedIn, and I gave a lengthy rant on LinkedIn about this kind of nonsense, this awful stuff. The interesting thing is that I was going to show you the original Twitter feed from them, but they've deleted this post in the last 12 hours. Apparently, they wanted to make it go away because they figured out that I go after people like this and I file reports on them with SEC and FINRA because I have no use for cheaters in my life. So they deleted the post and now they're just, oh, and they blocked me too. So the bottom line is, I'm a bitch. And when it comes to cheaters and liars and schemers, especially in my world, I got a DM. They happen about once every week. Someone starts off, hi, how are you? Want to be friends? What are you into? And all this. Usually it's a profile picture of a very attractive woman. Oh, yeah, I'm good. And then they say, have you ever thought about cryptocurrencies and Forex? And then I go after them. You are not an attractive woman who wants to know me. You are some craven scammer, probably out of India, and you're ugly. And I am screen capturing this and sending it to the SEC. And then they vanish into the night. And yes, I will actually have screen captures I can show you of having that kind of fun. Good God. Anyway. No. Okay. Now that I've ranted a little bit, it's like the former students of mine, they show up after a couple of years. Hi, I just wanted to catch up with you, wondered if you'd like to visit with me and relive our old times together. And, oh, by the way, I work for a life insurance company. Oh, you son of a bitch, quit that. You just want to sell me a life insurance policy. Yeah, let me get one out for $10 million on someone I don't like. Anyway. Stock valuation. There are different ways to do this. One of the problems, one of the first things we have to appreciate is that someone like you, sir, have had a checkered past. Never made much money, got into trouble with the law, I had to bail you out a couple of times. It was bad. But you see, that actually really doesn't matter to what value you have right now. The only thing that values you right now is how much you're going to make, what the present value of your future expected cash flows are. That's all that matters to us. And in a corporation, I don't care whether this corporation has been great or bad. What I want to know is what's going to happen next. So when we're talking about the value of a corporation, I am talking about, in some way, shape, or form, the present value of its future cash flows. That's all that matters in finance. Now, there are various ways that we can do this kind of stuff. Let me see. Do I have my TI in here anywhere? I don't know. I was going to do this on a regular TI, but I guess maybe I won't. But anyway, okay. One sort of brute force, blunt way, and this is the way I've told you that delegations of finance ministry officials from West Africa and the islands come here, and I'm the one who teaches them how to value private corporations in their countries to see if the government it's worth the government's time to kick some money in to boost them up. But we have to know what the value is, what the possible worth of this corporation is right now. That tells us how much it's worth the government putting into the corporation. And the way we do this is a fancy name, advanced financial modeling. Essentially, what we do is the value now is the present value of the future expected free cash flows. So in other words, that would be free cash flow next year over 1 plus the WACC to the first power plus the free cash flow the second year over 1 plus the WACC to the second power plus et cetera, out to infinity. Now, we don't want to go to infinity. That's just going to take too darned long. The reality of it is that once you get out to a certain number of years in the future, the present value of it has diminished to a point where it's negligible. So you might say, et cetera, plus maybe free cash flow at year 10 over 1 plus the WACC to the 10th power. We take it out that far, okay? Or you could do 15, 20. Now, the thing, though, is that these would have to be projections, free cash flow, free cash flow. Now, remember what I had shown you before. And we'll do this again, and I believe it is the week after next. Free cash flow, remember that that was operating income which is a fancy way or another way of saying EBIT. We jump over the interest. We don't worry about that. We just calculate the tax. So we say times 1 minus the tax rate to get the post-tax free cash for EBIT. And then remember, we add back in the depreciation expense. We had it here in the operating income. It was subtracted, but we leave it there because it's going to have a real tax shield effect. And then we also have to take out the actual capital expenditures. And we take out that nasty thing, the change in net operating working capital. In other words, is your current assets minus your current liabilities going up, which would absorb cash, or is it going down, which would release cash? So that little mess right there, and like I said, we'll do that again in a couple of weeks, take you back through that NOPAT, if you remember that thing and all that. Okay, so where are we with this? Okay. The thing of it is that what we would do is we would get the free cash flow here and use that as the basis for projections. Well, revenues go up this much, costs go up this much, et cetera, all that. Honestly, this is a real pain in the butt. Those are called pro forma income statements and balance sheets and all that, and they can be really a time-consuming thing. The reality of it is that, and I show that this is how I show it to the Ministry of Finance people. We do a dirty trick. We get it for free cash flow for 1 year or 2 year projection. And then we just say, okay, from there on, free cash flow grows at a specific rate year after year, from there on. So in other words, we just take the free cash flow at period 1 times 1 plus G, take that one times, the next one times 1 plus G. In other words, we shortcut. And then we take the present value of that mess, and we get the value of the corporation. Now, ultimately, this value here, if it's an unlevered, which is what I do there, it's an unlevered free cash flow, we take that value divided by the number of shares outstanding, and that gives us the price per share right now. And that is an intrinsic price per share. It's not the market price. It's what the underlying price that the stock wants to go to is. Now, the reality of it is that this is a cheap way to do it, but it works. Let me try this. And they give you some cheap, easy ones in the homework to do with this, not hard. A more, shall we say, precise way to do it would be to use the constant dividend growth model. Now, if a company has dividends that are stable and growing at a relatively constant rate, we can get a value right now by this formulaic, the present value, the price now, would be the dividend 1 period out divided by the WACC minus the growth rate. Now, the dividend 1 period out would be D0 times 1 plus G, the current dividend grown 1 period. Now, I will caution you right now that I could say this two ways. I could say the dividend they just paid is. So that'd be D0, and then you'd have to grow it 1 period. Or I could say they are expected to pay a dividend of something next year. That would be, I would give you the D1. Watch which way I say it, because I could say it either way on an exam or a quiz. Now, I certainly have no intention of tricking you. I'm going to be very specific. Is it D0 or is it D1? If I say they just paid a dividend of 25 cents and it is expected to grow at 5%, then you would take that dividend times the 1 plus 5%. But if I say the company is expected to pay a dividend next year of 30 cents, then I've already given you the D1. But one thing that's absolutely important for you to notice here, D1 creates P0. D5 would produce P4. D6 would produce D5. I'm saying that, and I'll show you why that's absolutely crucial that you know that. And what's amazing was, I teach an MBA version of this class. It's really no harder than this class, but I try to make it sound like it is. Don't ever repeat that. But in that class, they have these PowerPoints. Cengage has PowerPoints. And it was just blew me away. They were saying that you still have to include the D0. No, you don't. Be careful about that. Once you've gotten used that D0 to get the D1, the D0 is no longer relevant. Once you've got used the D5 to get D6, the D5 is no longer part of anything you calculate. And I'm going to show you what that means here in a minute. Now, an old company probably has a growth rate that's stable. I can't remember whether I told you this or not, but it was only maybe 5 years ago or so. I always said it. Old companies have stable growth rates of dividends. And then I went through and I said, well, let me find out if that's really true. And I went through some big old companies, Ford, Target, and things like that. And I'll be darned if they weren't very, you know, like the dividend 5 years ago divided by the dividend 4 years ago, dividend 4 years ago divided by the dividend 3 years ago. It was a stable number. Now, it wasn't always exactly the same, but it was very stable. And sometimes you'd have 1 year that would be like a glitch, but then it would go right back into the growth rate, into that constant growth rate. So constant growth rate of dividends is not something that is a fluke. It is an ultimate goal of dividend policy of many companies. So we can actually value older companies in a way simply by saying JMC has just paid a $1.50 dividend that is expected to grow at a relatively constant rate of 5% for the foreseeable future. The WACC is, let's say, 9%. So I can just say, okay. Now look at, it just paid the dividend. So in other words, I have to calculate D1. I wasn't given D1, I have to calculate it. So here we go. Here's the dinner. The price now of JMC Common would be $1.50 grown one period times one point plus 0.05 over the WACC 0.09 less 0.05. And I can get a nice clean on a nice clean workout here. 1.5 $1.50 times 1 plus 0.05 divided by, open parenthesis, 0.09 minus 0.05, close the parentheses, $39.38. That clean. You see, this is one of the things that makes these older big companies have lower betas, is their stability makes a lot more predictability in intrinsic price behavior and overall success potential for the company. It's just, I mean, look how fast that is. That's not a fluke. Wall Street knows that these old companies, everything's so predictable, we can use these ancient formulas, and they work fine on them. It's like gravity is easy when you're hanging around your typical part of the universe. It's only when you get close to a black hole that suddenly you're getting stretched and snapped and turned into goo in different parts of the universe in different times. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but there you go. Okay, so now here's the upshot, though. The problem is that companies can have a long period, or at least some period, when they don't have the constant growth dividend. They might not even have a dividend for a few years. They're plowing money back into the company to try to grow the company. So you've got a problem here, is that ultimately, and we try to emphasize this, a lot of times younger companies, they'll talk, well, we don't need no financial people and analysts, and we're cowboys, we're going to do things on their own. But sooner or later, reality calls them on the phone and says, look, get with the program, because there are vast trillions of dollars of capital available. If you behave like adults, use the best practices, and get with the program so that we can understand you in terms of financial models. So eventually they get around to the point where, yeah, okay, we'll pay a dividend. But as I said, you've got to be cautious about that, and I've talked about this before. Once the company starts paying a dividend, it really has got to keep doing that, because it'll really disappoint the investors if it stops doing it. And then the next goal is to get to a place where you're getting a constant growth dividend. You see, we like a company that pays a dividend. Because, and we also want that to be something that keeps happening. You, madam, it turns out you're my daughter. Easy, don't kill yourself. My genes didn't transfer very well. But you see, this one Christmas, you get a $100 bill in the mail from me. You know, here's $100. Well, then, you really like me then. And then, the next year, you get it again. And then your opinion of me elevates. I mean, it was pretty bad, you know, growing up. You know, you ask my kids, God, I messed their lives up. Oh, sorry. Anyway, but you understand that stability gives you a level of confidence. And if I break that stability, then you're really pissed off. You didn't really care before I sent you money, but if I send you money for a few years and then I stop, that really bothers you. So that's that whole point. Once you start doing these dividends, you better keep doing it. And then once you do that, the next thing is to get a constant growth on the dividends. But for the first few years a company pays a dividend, it's probably not going to be a stable dividend. You might, in one case, there was a company, they did want, we'd had some really bad stock shareholder meetings, and they had money, and they said, well, we'd really like to use all of this to plow back in, but do you think we should give a dividend? I said, yes, give a modest dividend, but also communicate clearly to them that you anticipate that that will be a dividend for that year, and there will probably be a year or two when there's no longer a dividend before we get back to dividends. Communicate with the shareholders properly, and then they'll understand. And so what happens is that you'll have a period starting off maybe. Here's year zero. Now, in year one, you decide that you're going to pay a dividend of, let's say, 50 cents. And then in year two, you're going to pay a dividend of 75 cents. Then in year three, you won't pay a dividend, but you'll pick them back up in year four, and you'll pay a 40 cent dividend. And then in year five, a 50 cent dividend. And then in year six, after year five, you will grow the dividend at an annual rate of 4%. After year five. Let's say that the weighted average cost of capital in this company is 11%. You see, once it gets to be a constant growth dividend, I've got this formula. I can do this formula. So in other words, the price of the stock at year five is predictably, the year six price over the weighted average cost of capital minus the growth rate. That is the total value of the company at year five. We have a name for that. It's called the horizon value. The horizon value. Out there on that horizon is a point where the company has stabilized and we can know how the rest of its life is going. I don't know what's going to be happening to you for the next few years. You might be arrested. You might go over to fight in Eastern Europe. You know, I don't know, you know, Slava Ukraina, something like that. Or, you know, you might kind of fizzle out and end up sleeping on the couch in my basement. I don't know. But I do know that I can see you at age 30. I can see almost every one of you at age 30. You, sir, you'll have a pot belly. You'll be getting your high blood pressure medicine. And you'll be married, 8 kids. You're the hell with that. And you'll have diabetes. It scares the hell out of me. A couple of years ago, I was up at the in the mall at Woodfield, and this guy in this men's shop says hi to me. And I thought, well, this some old guy. My God, that was my student. Oh, God, in 1998. God, I didn't say that to him. He was a bitter man. Things hadn't worked out for him. But anyway, you see, but for that first period, it's unstable. But then there's this point where the predictability, the mathematics cleans up for us. And then we can get down to the work of valuing the company. So ultimately, what I could do is I could take the present value of this 50-cent dividend at year one plus the present value of the 75-cent dividend at year two plus the present value of this zero dividend at year three, plus the present value of this 40-cent dividend at year four, plus this horizon value's present value 5 years out. And add them up, and I've got my answer. Now, let me tell you, that can be a pain in the backside doing that. But I've got a calculator routine. It's an app in the finance. It's not supposed to be used for this. You'll see me use it for its proper use in a couple of weeks. But I can turn this into a joke of a problem really fast. Write these steps down. And also, scratch out in the notes, be careful here. Because you can accidentally key in something that looks like the right character, but it's not the right character. We go apps. Well, did you see this calculator turns off and there's no reason for it? It's not saving battery turning. Okay, anyway. Apps, finance. Now go down here to 7, this NPV formula. Enter. Now, the first thing you'll put in is the WACC. Now remember, this is an app, so you just put it in as 11, not 0.11, 11%. Okay? Now put a comma. Commas are how you tell a TI calculator that you're finished with something and you're going to the next something. Now, in this one, do not ask why. This is what you do every time. Put in negative zero. And then put a comma. Later, we'll have a number in there, but that's not anything to do with what we're doing now. For these problems, it'll always be just a negative zero. Now, put in a comma. Now, the next thing you're going to do is hit second open parenthesis. That opens up a brace. This is the TI's way of knowing that you're about to tell it cash flow. Now, here's the risk here, is that it is LCDs are not great for telling the difference between a parenthesis and a brace. They look so similar, it's ridiculous. So, and I've had students come up to me, even during quizzes and exams, what am I doing wrong? I keep getting an error. And I just look at, oh, you put a parenthesis there instead of a brace. So just make sure it's a brace. And now you're just going to key in those dividends. 50 cents, comma, 75 cents, 0.75, comma, zero, comma. Now note, you have to put in the zero because it's a placeholder. The calculator is counting years here. So you've got to tell it what happened in year three. If you leave the zero out, it won't think that's year three. So you go a comma, and now you do a 0.40. And then you do a comma, and you put in the calculation for the horizon value. You could actually, let me point out something. You could do that separately and then put in whatever the result is. 0.50 times 1 plus 0.05 over 11 minus 0.11 minus 0.04. You could do it that way, too. I'm just going to show you that you can do it all in one shot if you want. In this case, it would be, I'm going to put in the whole 9 yards in one shot, 0.50 times 1 plus 0.05 in parenthesis, close the parenthesis, now divided by open parenthesis 0.11 minus 0.04. Oh, I put a 5 up top. That was wrong. It's a 0.04 up there. My bad. So it's 0.50 times 1 plus 0.04, close parenthesis, divided by 0.11 minus 0.04. And don't forget to put that 0.11 minus 0.04 in parenthesis. Now, at this point, you close the brace to tell the calculator that you're done with the cash flows. Second, close parenthesis. Do you see how similar that parenthesis and that bracket are? Just be careful on that. And now I'm going to close the parenthesis. I'm done with the app. Enter. $5.73 is the intrinsic price of the stock. Notice something really important here. That dividend of 50 cents is not in your final calculation. It's not there. It is part of the P5. It's already included. Don't put it in again, for God's sake. That was what blew me away. The MBA course, the PowerPoints, I put up the PowerPoints for that. And then I was just going through and make sure everything looked nice. And sure enough, they were putting in the dividend at the horizon value. You don't put in the horizon dividend. It's already there. It is embedded in the calculation of the horizon value. I actually talked to the Cengage rep about this, and that was not. It's driving me crazy because I promised I would do those PowerPoints, and then they're just like they're a mess with mistakes like that. But anyway, there it is, right there. Want to see one more? Let me give you one more just to finish this up. Let me do a timeline. Let's say you have a company, here's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Let's say they don't pay any dividend the first couple of years. And then a dividend of $1, $1.25, 75 cents, then $1, then $1.50. And then after that, it grows at 5% per year with a weighted average cost of capital of, let's say, 8%. Now watch me do it on the calculator. If you have a calculator, for God's sake, use it with me if you can. Apps, finance, NPV. The weighted average cost of capital, what did I say it was? 8%. Just key in an 8, comma, and again, just a negative 0, comma, open the brace, and just crank through it. We'll have no dividend, 0, comma, 0, comma, $1, comma, $1.25, comma, 75 cents, comma, $1.50. Oh, wait. No. I hit the horizon. So I'm going to just do the horizon calculation. $1.50 times 1 plus 0.05. Close parenthesis, divided by, open parenthesis, 0.08 minus 0.05, close the parenthesis. And now, at this point, I close the brace, second, close parenthesis, close the app with a parenthesis. $35.31 is the intrinsic value of the stock. One last minor point. What if you don't know the growth rate? I mean, that's a couple years out. Is there a way to estimate growth rate? Yes, there is. If you have to estimate a growth rate, it is going to be approximately the payout ratio on the stock. In other words, how much of earnings per share is paid out as a dividend times the return on equity to the stock. Now, the payout ratio is 1 minus the dividend rate times ROE. So, in other words, if EPS is $2 per share and your dividend is 50 cents per share, then your payout rate is 1 minus 50 cents over $2, which is 0.75. And then you multiply it by the ROE to get your an estimate of growth. Okay, that's enough. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.